You know what time it is. It's time for Rating the Nerd.
Minisode.
With your hosts, Tim and Zach. Take it away, boys.
Welcome back to Grading the Nerd. It's time for another minisode.
Itty bitty berry one.
Itty bitty berry, is what you said.
Yeah, I don't know. First thing that popped in my head.
A little Matt berry, perhaps.
Little Matt berry one.
Yeah, this week we're talking about the season premiere, series premiere, whatever you want to call it, episode one of The Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Which is my third favorite gospel from the Book of Mormon. Talks about Jesus's visit to Mos Espa. What? And how he bestowed magic long underwear on Boba Fett.
He did.
He had magic long underwear this episode. Oh man. So yeah, we're into Fettland. We're into Fettland. What did you think, man, of the episode one? They only released one episode. They didn't do the two episodes at once like they've been doing with a lot of shows.
Yeah, and it was a little bit shorter. It was only like 38 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it was not very long.
Not very long. So I did something a little different after I watched this show. I took some notes, and then those notes sort of started forming thoughts rather than just like little tidbits jotted down, and then I was like, I'm just gonna write a summary.
There you go. Okay.
This is something I used to do like back in the late 90s, early 2000s when Live Journal was still a thing.
Okay.
I had a Live Journal and I would write movie reviews after I watched.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sure. So that might be where my interest for all this comes from. But I sort of wrote it down and it's sort of in that vein. I'll go ahead and I'll read it to you.
All right. Lay your big journal on me, man.
Here it comes. I might put some music behind this. We'll see. You'll have to
let me know. All right, cool.
All right. One cannot talk about the Star Wars franchise without first talking about its fan base. In my experience, there are two types of Star Wars fan. There are those that love everything that carries the Star Wars brand on it, especially retro characters, and will go to absurd lengths to defend the franchise even when it doesn't make sense to do so. We'll call those the brand lovers. Okay. The other type are those with toxic fandom towards anything new in the series, simply because it never lives up to the nostalgic ideas of what the original trilogy was like 40 plus years ago. We'll call those the OG absolutists.
Right, okay.
It's worth pointing out, though, that the types of people I see ranting about the Book of Boba Fett come from both camps, albeit for somewhat different reasons. The brand lovers because it carries the Star Wars brand, something they will faithfully and unquestioningly follow into the bowels of hell if George Lucas deemed it so, but also because it carries a much-beloved retro character. A character that plays no real role in the original trilogy, and arguably had no real impact on the films. The absolutists are into it for similar reasons, however, it's less about the brand and more about the continued continuity of said beloved character. I find the love for Boba Fett very strange. The obscure and grossly obsessive attitude towards Boba Fett from both camps is unexplainable, suffice it to say, he looks cool. The Book of Boba Fett's first episode had trouble with its pacing, and, because of this, presents itself as extremely and embarrassingly slow. The CGI at times reminded me of a PS2 game in that some of the creatures and objects interacted with their surroundings in weird and unnatural ways. The acting was wooden at times, and the fights were shot from strange angles which may or may not have been to distract from just how bad the fight choreography was. The story begins with a memory of a seemingly impossible and yet still somehow lackluster escape from the Sarlacc pit, something that everyone's been asking about since the introduction of this show. The timeline then shifts back and forth between past and present, where Boba Fett has assumed control of a crime empire through the power vacuum left behind by the death of Jabba the Hutt. The rest of the show is a painfully slow political drama that meanders its way through the streets of Mos Espa with a couple of Gamorrean thick boys where Fett acquires a helmet full of plastic play money and then ends in a street fight followed by the least impressive parkour stunts I've ever seen. I mean that. I've seen better stunts performed by cats.
It's your favorite musical.
Yeah. It's awkward to watch as the infamous Fett as either not in tip-top shape or is perhaps still healing from his trouble in the deserts. It's anybody's guess. But either way, he bumbles around the fight with all the grace of an octogenarian fighting off his nurse bringing him his meds. Lastly... Lastly, we return to the past with the Tusken Raiders after they escaped from the pit, where Fett, with all the unpleasant appearance of a withered, hairless ball sack and dirty pajamas, fights a big gray CGI monster, a la Goro from Mortal Kombat, and is then recognized by the Tuskens as perhaps a hero, or maybe an equal. It's impossible to say, as we never get subtitles for the Tuskens, so who the fuck knows? Finally, we then jump cut to the credits, where I was left sitting and wondering, can I have my time back, or is that too just as impossible to obtain as whatever it is that the Tuskens were fucking saying? The end.
Oh, the end. Love it. Love it. Okay, so you thought it was all right.
Yeah, it's just all right.
I didn't want to interrupt, but I want to say, leave it to the bloody white man. I need subtitles, or I can't appreciate this.
Well, we got titles for, like, several of the other aliens, including the Rodian, but not the Tusken Raiders for some reason.
Yeah, they never subtitled Tuskens. Yeah. I'm not sure why. That is funny, man. That is. So
I was feeling a little snarky after I watched the show.
No. I'm okay with it. So I think I enjoyed it more than you did. Surprise, surprise, I know. But it definitely was not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, part of the reason I think I enjoyed it was because it feels like an old school Western that is just sort of ambling along through the wilderness. You know what I mean? Like it didn't feel like it was because this is one thing that you and I have talked about with a lot of the Marvel Disney Plus shows, especially is every second feels like it's just trying to set up the next thing in Marvel.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? And this sort of felt like a little bit of a nice break for me because The Mandalorian doesn't really feel that way until like later in the second season. I feel like it was a little bit like, okay, how does this all tie into the rest of the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I still love the hell out of that series. But this one kind of was just a nice, like, I don't have to over, like, psychoanalyze everything going on. It's just this, what'd you say, old hairless?
A withered hairless ball sack in dirty pajamas.
Yeah. Yeah. Just fucking fighting people. and making vague threats through Fennec Shan, his sidekick. Yeah, that's funny though, dude. Yeah, so I think I enjoyed it a little bit more, but let's get into some of what you talked about, and I'll give you kind of my counterpoints. I don't know, do you want to run in order of your manifesto, or do you want...
yeah, sure. So, I ranted about the types of Star Wars fans first, and then I got into... the show at large.
Yeah, okay.
I had much less to say about that show, aside from my other ravings about the fan base of Star Wars.
Right. Let's talk about the fan base a little
All
bit,
right.
Because I think you're really on point there, man. So I've always kind of found myself in this weird middle ground where, like, so I really enjoy Star Wars. I mean, hell, I've mentioned on here, and you and I have talked before, I play in a Star Wars role-playing game, you know, a la D&D, but in the Star Wars universe, and it's fun as hell. I mean, I love a lot about Star Wars, but I've never been, like, a hyper fanatic where it's like, you know, like, I mean, I had good friends in college that, like, camped out for episode one tickets, you know, not really for tickets. Like they had pre-purchased tickets. They camped out on the edge of the parking lot of the theater the night before to like, and they were not alone. You know, I mean, it's a pretty funny story. They told me, and I was like, I kind of wish I'd been there just for this. They said you weren't allowed onto the parking lot. Right. So they had like security guards out there that were like, if somebody got too close, like, cause you were like in the parking lot, but not like in the parking lot. You know what I mean? You know how like cinemas have like 850,000 parking spots,
right?
And they only use like 30 of them ever at one time. And so you were allowed to be like on the far edges, but you couldn't be, you couldn't really be too close, right?
Okay.
And they had security guards. And so they're like, we'd gotten there way early. We had kind of hung out all night in prep for the movie. And they're like, there were a big group of people on one edge of the forbidden zone, let's call it. And then there were another big group of people on the other edge, on the far side of the, right?
Uh-huh.
And so if you imagine it, like, think of like a cinema and the main doors are right kind of in the middle of the building, typically, right? On one face. So they were not allowed in the adjacent parking lot to that space.
Okay.
So they were on the, like, we'll call it the left and right sides of that parking lot on the edge, right? And they're like, people were dressed up and everybody had the plastic extendable lightsabers, because that's really all you could get back then. And they're like, every once in a while, somebody would like try to like creep in and the security guards would be like, hey, yep, get back. You know, like that was their whole job. Just keep people out of the parking lot area, the main parking lot area. And they were like, and then as it got closer and closer, everybody's getting antsy. And then they were like, all of a sudden, somebody started edging closer and the security guard didn't notice at first. We didn't think, because he didn't say anything. But then they're like, people kind of started crowding in around this person, and that person edged a little further out, and the security guard clearly saw them and didn't say anything. And they were like, what? And he's like, my friends were like, people started walking slowly forward and then started running, and everybody was yelling and holding their lightsabers aloft. And they're like, it looked like a scene from Braveheart, because the two sides of the parking lot just started closing in. Only when they got to each other, they both like 90 degree turned and ran to the door side by side. I'm like, there's part of me that was like, that sounds fun as hell, you know, to experience that. But I don't care that much. Like, I really love Star Wars, but I just don't care that much, you know? Uh-huh. And so I've always found myself in this weird middle ground where, like, the new trilogy came out. And, you know, people who, like you said, people who were the brand loyalist were like, it was the best thing ever. And I'm like, was it the best thing ever? Because it really didn't feel like the best thing ever. And then everybody else, for the most part, seemed to be like, this sucks, you know, you're pissing on George Lucas's corpse. And I'm like, I don't think he's dead yet.
Right.
And then they're like, you know, and they're like, he's dead to me. And I'm like, what are you talking to? You know, like, I found myself in the middle where I was like, those were fun to watch. Those were okay.
I'm sort of in the middle too. I wouldn't say that I love Star Wars. I liked it a lot more when I was a teenager, when episode one came out. I was really into the prequels and everything. But, but I don't love the series. I'm not like, it's not like me and my relationship with Doctor Who.
right. Exactly. That's how I equate it. So like, I equate it to like it feels like people's love for it is like how I am with comic book stuff, you know, like, I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. Or even like role-playing games. Like I just love, you know, I mean, we've talked about before, I have two fucking D&D tattoos.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like, and you have a Doctor Who tattoo.
I do have a Doctor Who tattoo.
Yeah. And so I feel like that's, it's funny because that's how I identify people, basically, as far as like what their fandom is. Like, what do you love enough that you would be willing to tattoo it on your body?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and I have a comic book tattoo also, and I'm looking to get more comic book tattoos. So it's like, yeah, like that's where my passion lies, is in role-playing games and gaming in general and comic books, you know? Mm-hmm. Hell, I mean, I never really thought of myself this way, but the more I've looked at it, like I'm considering getting some He-Man tattoos because I love He-Man. It's silly and it's dumb and it's a cartoon based on selling toys. And I don't know, man. I love it. Yeah. And so, but I don't have any Star Wars tattoos, and I have friends who have Star Wars tattoos and they're much more passionate about these things than I am.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. So I tend to find myself like kind of floating in the middle where I like, you know, like you said, I look at things and I go, okay, you know, like that's all right. But yeah, you're right, man. The fans are hardline one way or the other. So I guess all of that to say, if you're listening to us and we say something that pisses you off, whether you're a brand loyalist or a, what was the other?
OG absolutist.
OG absolutist. I just want to say, like, you're both probably wrong. And so, you know, just be mad at us and then move on. We'll get through it together. You know, we'll hands across Tatooine.
You know, I'm sure there's people who are going to be listening to this that are like, oh, there's a myriad of different types of fans of the movies. And it's a plethora, not just two, but come on. It's funnier when it's just two.
It is funnier when it's just two. And believe me, as with any crazy fandom, I think that most doctors would agree with us that we realize you're on a spectrum.
that was so messed up.
Anyway, all right, let's get into the show though, man.
We've alienated everybody listening to the show.
Now that nobody's listening, now that nobody that's ever heard of our show is listening, let's get into it.
Okay. First complaint. I thought that this was unbearably slow.
Right.
For a 38 minute episode, it felt like it was 138 minutes.
Wow. See, like I watched it with my son. My son and I lovingly joke about how I feel like Boba Fett many times is portrayed as the Mr. Magoo of the Star Wars universe,
Yeah.
Just a bumbling dolt who happens upon fortune, good fortune.
You know? Right. And I want to touch on that in a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, cool. So we'll come back to that. But this was kind of I like this because to your point, Boba Fett's never really given, in the movies, much play, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that I know there are people out there that are like, well, if you read this book and if you read this comic or whatever he's in, and to that I say what I say to my buddy, I only deal in canon, so that's not canon anymore. that will piss those people off.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
And it's totally a joke because I know that there's a ton of great stories out there that when Disney took over, they just said, yeah, none of that stuff's canon anymore, you know, because they wanted to redo it all. I think, honestly, like they were like, we'll take the same goddamn stories and just put them on screen. But if we say that's canon, there's no reason for people to come see our movie, you know? Yeah.
The same shit happened with Doctor Who. There was a lot of written material and even audiobooks or audio dramas rather for the show that all of them are pretty good. I mean, the stuff I've read and the stuff I've listened to is all really good. It's just, it's not considered canon.
Right. It just audio. How do you do that? Are they all fairly even keeled British accents?
Yeah.
Or is it okay? Like it sounds like a, sounds like a room full of magistrates trying to chew their way through a box of crisps. But I'm with you. And I'm the same way, man. I mean, there are so many stories I like in comics and shit where it comes back then and it's like, oh, well, this was an Elseworld. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, so they're like, this is not canon. And I'm like, shut up. That's a good story. Marvel remedied that a few years back when they just like crushed all of their Elseworlds and the people who, the characters who people really like all found their way into the main universe, you know, through like, I think it was called Battle World. But anyway, yeah. So there are a lot of people that, Boba Fett has not gotten a lot of play, so I kind of have enjoyed episode one just to get some more insight into how his mind works. You know, like, we saw a little bit of it in The Mandalorian, but at the same time, I like that in this we get a little bit of how, you know, the thing that kind of shocked me, honestly, is he says, like, I don't know that it shocked me as much as I just didn't expect them to say this outright. He says, like, you know, Jabba ruled with fear, and I intend to rule with respect. And I'm like, that's kind of always been Boba Fett's thing, is that he's supposed to be this badass and everybody's terrified as soon as he walks into a room,
right. You
know? And so I was like, oh, but that's interesting that with him, from his point of view, he sees respect as more important than that fear.
So,
you know,
see, I don't get that from Boba Fett, though. Like, to me, and that was the point that I brought up in my summary, was that I don't understand the obsessive fan base for Boba Fett. Like, if you watch the original trilogy, he's in those films for maybe, and this is generous, 5 minutes, if that?
Yeah, I think it's like two. I think it's like 2 minutes.
Is it really 2 minutes?
I don't know if it is exactly. I did see a video pop up that I haven't watched yet on my recommended videos that said like how Boba Fett became the most feared and loved Star Wars character in 2 minutes and 8 seconds. And so I don't know if that was just in the one movie or if that's his total screen time.
But it feels like it's probably closer to his actual screen time because he doesn't have any real lines. He doesn't do much except for escort the body of Han Solo, right?
Right, right.
I mean, yeah, other than man. That...
Should we call out spoilers for the original Star Wars trilogy?
No, fuck. If you haven't watched that by now... God damn.
I know people, man. I know people who hold that like a badge of honor that they've never seen any Star Wars stuff. Funny enough, one of my good friends that I play the Star Wars RPG with, he's never seen any Star Wars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he plays the game and he's like, I don't think he'd ever played an RPG. And he was like, yeah, I'd like to check this out. And then he started, he's like, this is actually kind of fun. But it's so funny because we're like, are you going to watch the Star Wars stuff now to just kind of get an idea of the world and stuff? He's like, nah. Like, it's just so hilarious to me to be like, no, like I'm enjoying this game and this is fun. This is good shared storytelling, but I don't care in the world at all, really. Just it's mostly hanging out with you guys, which I've been there, man. Right. I mean, that's a big part of why I like to game is just hanging out with people. So that's funny though. Yeah. So,
but yeah, it's like, anyway, yeah. That's like why I said it's impossible to know why people love this character so much. Suffice it to say that he just looks cool.
Yeah. I think that's where it all started. I think it all started with like, he looks cool. I think the lack of insight and screen time really played to his advantage because people are kind of, you know, it's kind of like when, I mean, we've all been there. We all have friends who at one point or another, you're out somewhere and they see someone who looks like they may have murdered somebody within the past hour. And they're like, oh, he looks mysterious. I'm kind of into him. And I'm like, do not go talk to that guy. I don't want to have to be searching the woods for you tomorrow. You know, like, anyway, I think that helped, though. I think that really helped because people were like, what's the deal with this guy? Why is he the bounty hunter that, like, everybody seems to be going to and everybody's sort of, like, scared of? And they did a great job with that early writing. You know, I mean, it's like, when they're in Cloud City and Vader tells him he's like, no disintegrations. At that point, we hadn't seen why he would say that, but we're all like, fuck, does he just disintegrate people? Like, what the hell, man? Like, you know, like, I think that really played to his benefit. And then they went back in with the expanded lore and kind of filled in his backstory, you know, from that, which then people were just like, yeah, now I'm totally bought in hook, line and sinker, you know?
I don't know, man. I still don't get it. It doesn't right appeal on. To me.
Right. Yeah. No, I get it. Well, that's because he's not wearing a foppish outfit and traveling around in a telephone booth. That's why. That's why you.
I want to watch that show.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see somebody talking about tea and crumpets for 20 minutes, and then they happen into a room and they're like, oh. I didn't realize, oh, you're here. I'm sorry, I'm trying to sort of not steal, but steal Eddie Izzard's bit. You know, perhaps I should leave. Perhaps you should. Oh, man, I'm into it. But I get it. I mean, I get the mysterious stranger. Again, it's very Western-like. It's Clint Eastwood, Good and the Bad and the Ugly, or the outlaw Josie Wales. You know, it's like, it's this cowboy, and you're like, what is his deal? And that's sort of what we get with Boba Fett. You know, it's just, it's that mystery that draws people in, I think.
I guess in this episode, we definitely get a Western-y type of feel, but I don't like that either. Like, Westerns have always seemed slow to me, and that might be another reason why this just seems like an incredibly slow-building episode.
Gotcha, yeah. And it definitely is. We get a lot of flashback-y type stuff in this, and then, it, like you said in your kind of breakdown, it jumps back and forth between time periods, which I don't necessarily mind. You know, if this lasts four seasons and they're still doing it like fucking Arrow, I may have to spoon my eyeball out, you know. But I think this is a good intro to, like, what happened before, where he is now, what's going on, you know?
I think the season of the show is going to be riddled with flashbacks.
I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, I think so, too, just because he's been a character that's been out of lore for so long that now it's like, well, what happened to him all that time, you know? So I think you're right. We're absolutely going to, the first season is going to be riddled with flashbacks of, like, here's how he survived.
I don't know why anybody cares. I don't see anybody clamoring for a Jar Jar Binks spinoff.
That's because everybody hates Jar Jar Binks. both sides of that fandom that you talked about dislike him. In fact, it's so funny. I think you're one of the few people that I've ever talked to that's like, I don't think he's that bad.
I think I think that maybe his character in the accent that they chose for his people is a little problematic, but...
Yeah, you're right. So they carry with them this weird racial thing, which George Lucas was really into in the prequels. I don't know why, you know, like, even like basically the economist that like ran everything and held like trade routes and trade embargoes, he like made them sound very heavily Asian, and I'm like,
oh yeah, that's right. I forgot.
What are you doing? And then like they even cut a character where he had said that he wanted to add a character to try to cut through some of that racial stuff. I still remember reading this because I was like, oh my god, he's like an old man who just doesn't get it. He wanted to introduce a character that was like almost druidic, like a lot closer to the earth and animals and the energy all around us. And he wanted them to be like a tanned skin, like indigenous person that wore furs. And I was like, you're making a Native American, stop it. Like, you know, and he's like, yeah, they'll sound like an indigenous person to the world that they're on, wherever it is. And they'll be, and I'm like, oh my god, you just don't get it. And fortunately, somebody talked about it and was like, listen, I think two potentially harmful racial stereotypes from an old white man is enough. let's leave that one on the floor, you know? But anyway, Jar Jar kind of sucks. So that's why everybody's looking for a Boba Fett show and nobody's asking for a Jar Jar show.
Yeah.
That was the original question, right?
Yeah. Something like that. I don't remember.
I wandered off into another state, but we're back now. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I get it. Like, and I've heard people ask about the other bounty hunters too. The other characters that seem badass. People are like, you know, like Bossk is the like the kind of the lizardy type bounty hunter that doesn't wear shoes. You know what I'm talking about, from the original trilogy, when they're meeting with all the bounty hunters.
Yeah, I think so.
And I mean, I've heard people say like, yeah, give me a Bossk show. I'll watch that. So I think it's just the characters that feel badass. We want to know more about them, mm-hmm. You know, even if they haven't presented a bunch on screen, they've got that badass feel. Let's see what they're up to. Right.
Sure. Why not?
Why not? So anyway, I think that's why, again, very, very long winded way to get there. But so what else? I forget what the next thing you said was.
So I said, aside from the show being embarrassingly slow,
right,
the CGI I didn't think was very good at times.
Okay, yeah, and you said that, and I tend to agree with you in some cases. What CGI specifically were you talking about?
Specifically the massive creature.
Okay, yep.
There were times where they were wandering through the desert, and the different angles, like there was a buzz shot and a side shot where they were walking side by side. And he felt so plastic in those scenes that it didn't seem like he was really interacting with the surroundings. Like, it just felt like he was sort of there, like a superimposed AR image or something.
right. That was the scene that I was like, man, he almost feels like he's floating slightly above the earth, you know? Yep. And CG is just hard to do. Like, that kind of CG skin, I think flesh, is hard to do in daylight, in a really bright surrounding like that. That was the only part I really felt was really bad. I thought, like, at the campfire with him, I felt like it felt good, you know?
That,
like,
wasn't too bad. It looked a little bit more like a puppet at that point.
Right.
Which I was fine with.
Right.
But once we got into, like, broad daylight and the things walking around with them, I was like, this just looks really out of place.
Yeah. Which is, I think you'll see in a lot of movies and shows, they do that. They'll put stuff like that a lot of times in the dark because it's just harder to make it look good in the light. You know what I mean? Like, Godzilla and Kong are going to fight in the middle of the night. You know, like, they're not going to fight at noon because Godzilla's skin, and fur's not too bad. I think it's when you get skin bits, like, you know.
It used to be the other way around. Fur used to be really hard to animate. Yeah,
it really did. Yeah. And I think part of the reason for me when I watch it is I think it's twofold. I think one is it's just hard to do regardless and make it look natural and not plasticky. But the second thing, too, is I think that especially when you're in a world with alien type creatures, this is skin that we've never seen before. And so something dips into that uncanny valley for us because, you know, I mean, if you think about like Godzilla at least has just got lizard skin. We've seen lizard skin in the daylight before. We sort of know how it looks. Our minds go, oh, that's scaly and probably dry, and you know what I mm-hmm. mean? Like,
yeah.
But when you see like a creature with like purplish or, you know, purple and gray or whatever skin, our minds aren't as accustomed to seeing that, especially in that form. And so I think our minds go, that almost looks real, but not quite.
Sure.
You know, because we just can't reference it to anything in the real world. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've always thought that's why it's hard, kind of, is because when you like, basically, if you made it human looking skin and you got it so that the CGI was dead to nuts and you were like, yeah, that looks like a human walking. And then you just tilt the color enough to where it's something that our minds aren't used to seeing. It suddenly looks off and we don't know why. Even if you don't adjust the brightness, shadow, anything else, you just change the palette.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that happens. I think our minds just can't rectify what's going on.
Sure.
But yeah, you're right. The CG on that guy was that little massive thing was a little wonk. I don't know. So what about the other CGI in there? Like we had some droids and we had.
No, I thought those looked bad too. The only time
you thought the droids looked bad.
Well,
also?
Like the ones that were sort of like pit droids that were bringing armor to Boba Fett and putting it on him. I did think those looked a little plastic in the scene. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the other droid that's there, the Matt Berry droid.
Right. Yeah. We get Matt Berry in this episode, man.
He wasn't too bad. He actually looked like he was part of the scene.
Yeah. And I do love that they gave a voice to this character, though, because the last time we saw him, if you remember, was in the original trilogy where he's branding other droids.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this scene?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, where like it's the little like conk or donk or I don't, but like the little droids that look like trash cans.
Yeah.
With feet. He like flips one upside down and that hot brand like on the bottom of its foot, which I'm like. You know, when I remember seeing that scene, I'm like, holy fuck, do droids feel stuff? Like, what the hell? But I did like that they finally gave that, again, they kind of fleshed that character out because, you know, he seemed to relish in torturing that droid in that scene. And then this one, he's like, we should just throw them into the pits, you know, or kill them. Like, he was like, he had no, like, empathy for these Gamorreans at all, you know?
Right.
He was like, oh, just kill him. I'm like, that's funny that he just seems to be like sadistic, you know? But yeah, I love me some Matt Berry. I was excited to find out that was him.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I'm with you, man. And part of me doesn't know how much that is like a TV budget and schedule. Does that make the CGI a little wonky at times, you know, mm-hmm. because they're like, listen, you got to get this done. And we can't throw 1,000 people at it. You know, like, right. I don't know. But yeah, you're right, though. Some of the droids did feel a little plasticky and a little removed from reality. Yeah. So droids aside, what else did we want to talk about?
There's a lot of other things I wrote about in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go.
So I thought that the acting was wooden at times. The fight scenes were shot from weird angles. The escape from the Sarlacc pit was lackluster.
Let's talk Sarlacc pit.
Okay.
Yeah. This, I was a little shocked because it was kind of cool to see him escape, but it made me feel of like the movie pitch videos, the Green Rant, the movie pitch videos where it's like, well, that's going to be hard. Like, not at all. Barely an inconvenience. You know, like that's sort of how this felt a little bit to me. It felt like it was like way too easy for him to just get back out of that thing.
Yep. Yeah. Different. The only thing I liked about it was this was after the fact, a lot of people pointed out that there's a scene in Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where Patton Oswalt is filibustering. And he's doing that, he goes off on this like fanfic idea of like what it would be like for Boba Fett to escape the Sarlacc pit. And it's almost word for word exactly what happened.
Right. No, we see the gloved hand of Boba Fett. that's the line that I always remember. Yeah, I thought that was really funny when I saw that. When somebody mentioned it, I was like, oh my God, he did almost say that word for word. That's great. So yeah, that did feel a little anticlimactic. As far as the fighting, I didn't really mind the fighting as much as you did. It sounded like you didn't really like the way it was shot, and it felt a little over choreographed.
If to me it felt under choreographed. It looked like bumbling around, which is why I said it looked like a bumbling octogenarian trying to fight off the nurse bringing him his meds. Because
which fighting though?
Well, this was after when they get attacked in the streets with the guys with the shields.
Yeah.
And they're trying to defend themselves. And then Shand breaks free and chases after a bunch of them. Just before that, Boba Fett's trying to fight these guys off, and he's not doing a great job.
No, no, they're really not.
Yeah, I mean, they're really hauling ass on him, and he's falling on the ground, and he's tripping, and I think he breaks his hip, and, you know, it just looked bad. It just did not look good at all.
So I bought into that because at the very beginning, when, not the very beginning, but the beginning of this kind of sequence of modern, the current day or whatever, when Finnick wakes him up and's like, you know, it's time, we got to meet with people. If you notice that the Bacta tank that he gets out of, it says something like healing paused incomplete or something like that, or rejuvenation incomplete.
Okay.
You know? And so I sort of took it that like, he's still pretty beat up from his last thing. And so he's like, but he's just like, all right, I got to do this. Let me get up and get ready. You know, like, So that's where I kind of attributed that is like, he's still only fighting at like 80% or whatever, you know? But I also liked too, again, we've talked about this many times. I like when things just aren't super smooth for a character. Yeah. So I liked when even he did like you could tell him and Finnick work well together. Like he puts his leg out so she can jump off of it to get some leverage. And she does. And she just bounces off the shield. Like, it's like, listen, I know this. I know you guys have done this move hundreds of times probably, and it's always effective. And this time they've just got these big tower shield things. And you can't get out of them, you know, like they've got you hemmed in. See, I felt like he felt kind of powerful still, but it was through grit. And again, that's what made it feel like a Western to me, too, because like they hit him a couple times with the shock, you know, the big like energy weaponry that they have. Mm-hmm. He just sort of like, you can tell he's like, ah, and then he like hits it with his forearm to knock it loose. You know,
so I didn't feel that way at all. I think if I was watching this and I knew nothing about Star Wars, knew nothing about Boba Fett, which arguably no one knows anything about him, it to me looked like he was about to die in that fight. And I was just not feeling it. It just felt like he was overpowered and he barely got out alive.
Yeah, I could see you thinking that. And I felt like he was definitely losing. But also, again, watching that fight, I was like, he essentially got cattle prodded like, what, half a dozen times? I feel like that would knock most of us on our ass.
Right. You know? Right. Well, that's my point, is it looked like he was going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but then I like that they actually gave the Gamorreans a chance to be kind of badasses. Because in the Star Wars lore, the pigmen, the Gamorreans, they're tough as shit. Like, they're scary strong, you know? They've always kind of played them in the movies as kind of bumbling idiots, you know, again. So I kind of like that they gave them a moment to just come up and be like, I'm going to hit you with this piece of metal hard enough that it's going to, like, knock you down, you know?
Yeah. So just before that, there one thing that I noticed, this is after they've left the scene with Garza Flip and the helmet full of plastic play money that didn't look real. And they're walking, and all of a sudden I noticed, oh, the Gamorreans are gone. They're not with them anymore. If you look behind them, they're not in the scene at all.
Yeah, they're not in that shot. I noticed that too.
And then they get attacked. And it was like, well, what the fuck took them so long to help fight? Right. If they were there in some way, what took them so long to fight back?
Yeah, who knows?
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Then it goes from there to the really, like, I picture somebody planned this whole fucking thing out with a big, like, drawing board and all these scenes, and they're like, and then they're gonna jump from this roof and jump off this chimney, it's gonna be great, they're gonna slide underneath this pole, it's gonna look awesome. But it did not look good at all. It looked like it was a scene taken from the set of American Gladiators. I mean,
it was pretty, to call it parkour, it was pretty basic parkour.
Yeah.
Now again, you get my fat ass up on a roof trying to do anything halfway near that and I'm going to die.
Right. I'm not saying I can do better.
Right. But for guys doing parkour, it felt a little bit lackluster.
It was a little lackluster. You know? It was pretty basic. I was just not, I was not entertained by it. That's what I said. And I knew you were going to bring up Cats, the stage production. But it did feel like I could have seen better stunts performed by a cat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, cats are evil creatures that or have the souls of demons, I think, or something. So I would imagine that they're probably fairly nimble. So I was kind of more okay with it than you obviously were, but I see what you mean. It feels a little lackluster again.
It's very lackluster, and I don't necessarily think that it needs to have style added to it. I think that the escape should have been more impressive, or something that should have felt more grandiose, for lack of a better term. Like maybe they jump from a really tall building down to a really low building, and they roll and they get away that way, and you know, something like that. But instead, it was just like, I think they jumped across maybe 2-3 buildings at best.
Yeah, they did the little hopscotch on the chimneys that have closed tops for some reason.
Yeah.
The other thing, the one thing that bothered me in that scene is when she's chasing them, and we see her, she jumps from one building and lands on like a little, I don't know, 18-inch by 2-foot platform that's like sticking out of the side of a building, you know? Uh-huh. It's like right there on the roof edge. It's just this little platform that she lands on. And I was just like, what is that thing for? Like, why is that part of the building? Is that a landing platform for people jumping rooftop to rooftop?
Yes.
Like, that can't serve any other purpose.
Right.
You know, like, so that's the kind of stuff that gets me, where it's like an element's been added specifically for the parkour, you know? And you're like, and you can tell, you're like, that's weird. But yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it. I kind of laughed. My son and I were watching it, and I was like, parkour. I started doing the office thing, because I'm like, that's always the way, man, is in, you know, to quote the Mandalorian, this is the way. This is the way we do like assassins with agility, is that they can parkour. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is that real? Do a lot of assassins know parkour? I gotta, in my heart, think they don't. You know, like,
yeah,
but you know, it is what it is. It's an action beat. It was funny. So you mentioned that they had just left the cantina with Garza Fwip, which should have been named Garza Fap. Am I right? Jennifer Beals, man, she still looks good. Mm-hmm. Her and Ming-Na Wen, they're both in their 50s.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. They're both born in the same year, I think. Let me see. 63. Good on them. I mean, well done taking care of yourself. Really, and Tamara Morrison, I mean, I don't even know how old he is, but
he's like 60, I think.
Yeah, he was born in 60. So what is that? 60 till now, because of math. 61, 62?
62, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, 61. His birthday's in December.
Yeah, but this year it's 62. We're going to say 62.
Yeah, yeah. Right. How dare you? But I mean, that guy, though, even getting out of the back to tank, like, I was like, dude, if I was him, I'd be like, I need a shirtless scene in every movie, because he's still ripped, man, for being in his 60s.
I don't know. I didn't.
He's got H-frame.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
He's got H-frame. He's kind of got that weird, like, Tim Allen sort of, like, bulky build to him. You know what I mean?
Tim Allen
looks like
How dare you? Tim Allen's head wouldn't fit in 2 Boba Fett helmets. Tim Allen. You're gonna love, I know you love my daughter anyway, with all the catch jokes and shit she throws at you, but when her and my wife were watching Wheel of Fortune this morning on like Netflix or something.
That's weird.
And it went past this, I think my wife turned it on just to have something playing while she was like getting breakfast ready. And it went past the audience, and my daughter goes, "Gah!" And I was like, "What?" And she goes, "Did you see that kid's head?" And I was like, "No." I go, "No, was it big?" She goes, "Bigger than Zach's."
Oh, man. I'm glad I'm part of your guys' inside jokes and your family.
Big time, man. Yeah, yeah. You're like practically a family member now. Like, yeah. It was hilarious.
That's funny.
Yeah, so what else, man? What else did you say? So see, the fighting, though, like, I felt the fighting was pretty cool when he fought the big Goro thing, even though it was big and ridiculous.
I didn't like it.
I thought it was cool to, like, get on its back and strangle it with a chain like I'm Princess Leia. I was into it, man.
I don't know, man. By this point in the show, I was incredibly, incredibly done with it.
Okay.
Like, this... I was dreading this coming up to watching this almost as much as I was dreading Hawkeye. I think I might have been dreading Hawkeye more. Hawkeye turned out to be good. This, on the other hand, I never for one second believed it was going to be good. And I was, I was right in terms of my prediction for myself anyway. I was right. It was, it's not good. It's not, there was nothing about this I thought was entertaining.
Right on, right on. Okay.
Especially the fight with the big Goro monster. It was a big gray CGI monster. Okay. He chokes him out. Cool. And then he walks back to the Tusken village with the kid in the head. And obviously the Rodian's been stomped to death.
Right. Or drowned in sand. He got drowned in sand, which... That seems like the worst way to die, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he got back. He lets the kid kind of take credit, the little Tusken kid, for killing the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it looks like. We don't know because there's no subtitles.
Nope, no subtitles. But... Nobody fucking knows. It's anybody's guess. And then the fucking Hank Hill of the tribe comes over and hands him a beer.
Chief Hank Hill.
Yep, Chief Hank Hill. Jump cut to credits. Fuck this show.
Oh shit, man. Now, okay, so now let me go into just a couple things I thought the show did really well.
Okay.
But I'm with you, okay? Believe me, I'm not trying to go, oh, this is every bit as good as, you know, some of the best stuff we've seen this year. This show definitely, and in fact, my buddy who is a huge Boba Fett fanboy, he just loves the guy. You know, he plays in the Star Wars RPG with me. Somebody said something about Book of Boba Fett, and he replied with, first episode, kind of meh.
Really?
And I'm like, yeah. So I'm with you. I don't think that you're off key at all about, like, the slow burn and, like, kind of lackluster. And I'm with you. I enjoy it because it's maybe I am a little bit because it's just Star Wars. Like, I'm kind of like, okay, like, maybe if this didn't have a Star Wars tag on it, I'd watch this and go, yeah, I'm not going to stick with this show, you know, but it's one of those things where, especially like I watched The Mandalorian, I love the hell out of that. And I know that because that has a little bit of a slower Western type feel to it as well. Maybe I've gotten to where Jon Favreau, who's doing this one as well, and Dave Filoni, who's old school Star Wars alum and co-wrote this, maybe they've built enough trust with me that I'm like, it's going somewhere. We're going to get a payoff, you know, maybe that's it. But yeah, I don't think you're way off base there at all.
I don't think I'm off base things, either.
right. Yeah. You agree with you
fucking
all the time.
Spot on.
But no, the couple things I think they did really well. There are some great individual performances in this. I feel one of them is, and I'm going to say his last name wrong. David Pasquese. He plays the mayor's majordomo that comes you know, he did some like nuanced things, which I'm sure they probably had some of this scripted, but the guy is also just a hell of an improv guy, which I didn't know. I want to go back and look now. And so it made me question when I heard that how much of his shtick as the majordomo was improv, you know. I love that he played the shitty right-hand man of a politician so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nuanced thing he did that I love is, you know, he says, I'll take this back to the mayor. He may not receive it as well as I do, but thank you. And then he walks away and he makes sure he gets off of the trap door. And then he turns around and says, by the way, it wouldn't surprise me if you get another visit from, you know, like basically a threat. But he waits till he's off the trap door down to the Rancor pit, you know, right. which I thought was funny that, like, you know, he made sure he cleared that. I thought that just the interaction, it's always hard too for, like, it's got to be hard for Temuera Morrison because Boba Fett is somebody who doesn't talk a lot and is kind of quiet and, you know, so
boring.
It's tough to put, it's tough to put a lot of character nuance in that. You know what I mean? Like, unless you give them the Bernthal twitch that John Bernthal gives his characters that act that way, unless you give them some sort of physical twitch, it's hard to, like, you know, build a lot of, like, oh man, he killed it in this scene. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, man, yeah, the other performances I thought were really good were the Twi'lek servers. They were just hot as hell, man. Good on them. You guys killed it. But I don't know, man. Enjoyable for me in that I'm excited to see what's coming.
Yeah.
If it was a one and done, or like I said, if it wasn't Star Wars related, I don't know that I'd be into it.
Yeah, I thought it was shit. So
right.
I was going to say, I thought it was boring, but it was worse than that. It was just shit. We could talk about Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, let's talk about Rotten Tomatoes a little bit. I did open that up.
The thermometer for episode one so far is at 83%.
It is, yeah. And only a 71 audience score, though.
Yeah, but that, to me, both of those are still too high. I mean, there's some bad reviews on here for it.
What about this? What about Roger K? Let's see where Roger K's from. It won't even tell me. That's how well known he is. That's one of the reviews. Am I looking at audience reviews?
Are you reading the one that says I don't usually rewatch episodes?
Yes.
I found that.
But he's watched this one four times in less than a week.
Good for you, Roger K. Good for you. Got nothing else important going on in your life. You can rewatch this nonsense. It's fucking insane. I will never watch that episode again. In fact, when I'm done with this show, I will never watch this show again.
That's a good place to stop.
Yep. You heard it here first, kids. This show blows.
Are you rating individual episodes, or are you going to wait and rate at the end of the season?
Let's wait and rate at the end. You know, as much as I think it won't, it might surprise me. Who knows?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, man. I don't know that I've got much else to say. Like, I'm still cautiously optimistic, but yeah, it was definitely a little bit of a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've seen a lot of people thought it was all right. You know, I don't know anybody that was like, oh my gosh, yeah. You know, we have another buddy that's a big Star Wars guy. Have you talked to him that you work with?
Mm-mm, no.
We've talked about Steve on the podcast.
We have talked
about
Steve on the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, I know Steve's a big Star Wars guy. I was wondering if you and you guys still work together.
I think he was looking forward to this. I have not talked to him. Well, I mean, we watched it over the holiday, so I haven't.
That's true.
To him yet.
Gotcha. I'd be interested to see his take on it.
I'm sure he's going to love my initial synopsis of Star Wars and its fan base.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. That's okay. It's not like you work for him or anything. So, all right, man. Well, cool. Next week, kids, we'll talk about episode 2.
Yeah, we'll be back.
Alrighty.
All right. Later, man.
See ya.
Greeting the Nerd was recorded and produced by Zach Boyd and Tim Witham in Dayton, Ohio. If you liked our show, subscribe, rate, share, and review on Apple Podcasts or other platforms. For questions, comments, or ideas, drop us an email at gradingthenerdpodcast@gmail.com. As always, Anchor members can send us a voicemail. Our theme music was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find all of his credits and links in our show notes. Come back for more, and we'll see you next time on Grading the Nerd.